All right, good morning. Good morning, guys. Pete, what's wait a second. It is Monday, the 21st of April, 2025. Pete, what number is this?
Daughter Smoke 259. Crank it in, Ralph. Crank it in, Robert. You know
You know,
how to crank it in.
it's a lot of guys. We explained the whole crank it in thing. I don't think we need to do that again. Anyway, hello to Pete. Hello to Dean. Everybody's here. We're recording. We're on the road with 259. First, the opening, I want to start. You know, one thing that we were really disturbed about was the impending FCC action against direct conversion receivers. You know, it's just outrageous, like unbelievable, I think is the word, unbelievable. You know, they're going to prosecute. They said they're going to prosecute two people in Northern Virginia, and that would definitely be Dean and me. And so, you know, and this is all being caused. But unbelievable. The 85th harmonic. Who would have thunk that the 85th harmonic of our little direct conversion receiver would be interfering with Elon Musk's Starlink? My camera went off. Hold on. Put the camera back on. There we go. That it would be interfering with it. See, I bet you that was Elon Musk turning off my camera right now. You know, he's doing that. But it was they noticed a pattern that it was especially that the interference was especially strong over Melbourne, Australia, over Bali, Indonesia, on New Zealand's North Island, over the UK, Sweden, Holland, and more recently Argentina. All of these locations are places
ICAP.
where, you know, people have built these receivers.
Did you mention Bali?
Bali, yeah, Bali, Indonesia.
Oh, Bali,
Yeah.
Indonesia. Yes,
Yeah,
yes.
right there. I mean, so it was just, I mean, outrageous and unbelievable. But here's the question for our viewers and listeners. How many paragraphs in the Post about this did you have to read through before you realized that the date on it was April 1st? Come on, guys, fess up. We're looking for confessions. This year's April 1st caper did not have the kind of hook that we often use, where people have to email or send a message to the governor of New Jersey about the use of soldering irons in the home or something like that. We didn't have that this time. So this time we're just going to ask for people to fess up. And listen, one thing I'd say is don't feel bad about it because I myself have fallen victim to these kind of scams just about every year. This year, for example, I briefly believed that Warren Buffett had in fact bought Tesla Corporation. It was on the internet. It must have been true. It was not true. So don't feel bad. Just fess up. Send us an email. Let us know how far along you went in this scam before you realized that it was if you made it to paragraph four, if you got past the 85th harmonic point. You know, I don't know. We might have to revoke your amateur radio license. I don't know. Anyway, that's where we stand on. Any comments on that, Dean or Pete or?
I just want to know if you actually calculated the 85th harmonic, Bill.
I did some long, quick long division, and 85th harmonic will put you up. I assumed that they were operating on the 600 megahertz frequency range, somewhere around there.
Go.
There you go.
All right.
85th, the 85th harmonic, man. They are trouble. They are trouble. I'm telling you. People talk about the second harmonic, the third harmonic. Man, the 85th harmonic is the worst. All right. So we're asking people to fess up, but let's do a little bit of travelogue because Pete has been doing some traveling recently. I know. I know. I feel bad because as a former representative of the bureaucracy, I feel bad that you're stuck in this thing, but. You actually, it turned out that, you know, every dark cloud has a silver lining, and you got to visit Los Olivos,
Los
California. So
Olivos.
tell us about that.
Well, first off, Los Olivos is a little community about 85 miles from my front door. 85 miles. So I should just preface this. In order to get a passport these days, you have to show up at a passport office, especially where I thought I had to get a new one because the time had expired. And let me tell you, because of this real ID thing, everybody and his brother is looking at a passport or a real ID. And best I could see, there was a schedule that 4 months, 4 weeks out, and there was no availability. There was no place that you could go in 4 weeks that you could show up at a passport. Do it, and it says, okay, broaden your search. So I kept broadening it, and pretty soon it came to Los Olivos, 85 miles away. And I clicked on that, and it says, yeah, we got a schedule 2 weeks from now.
Oh, Pete, you're breaking
So I
up.
clicked on it, and I clicked on it, and I said, okay, that looks like the place we ought to go. So you go to Santa Barbara, which is just 42 miles from here, and then it's 43 way 101. And it's like going into another world. I mean, this is in wine country, and Los Olivos is this little town. And as soon as you get off the freeway in Santa Barbara, you got to
Now, Pete, you're
eight
breaking up.
miles.
You're breaking up. You're freezing. So maybe just turn off the video. They might be able to do it that way.
Okay, let me see here.
Turn off the video.
I don't see the thing that says to turn off the video. Am I
Okay.
good?
You're okay now, but it's broken up like three or
I'm
four times.
okay. So anyway, you get up there,
No. Nope.
dense fog, pull into this little town, and I said, man, I need a cup of coffee and I need to make a pit stop. And you drive up and down the 3 blocks of the Los Olivos, and there's no place open. There's a lot of high-end restaurants because this is the middle of wine country. So finally, I go into this place, which was like a hotel, and I said, is there some place I can get a cup of coffee? And they said, there's only one place that's open. This is like 8:30 in the morning. And it was a competitor. They said they have an open dining room. So I went to the dining room, and I said, can I order a cup of coffee and a bagel? And the lady says, yeah. And she says, by the way, the restrooms were over there. She must have sensed the pain on my face. So a bagel and a cup of coffee was $14.01. And if you got a light breakfast at this place, it was $35. So I said, man, they really got you captive. But anyway, the whole episode with the post office and the State Department, I go in there and the guy says, why'd you fill out this paperwork? I said, because it's 10 years plus the 3 years grace period. And I says, the date would have been February 2025. He says, it's the year, not the date.
Who thinks like that? Where does that
The
come from?
year.
I mean, they say that the thing expires. You don't just, oh, it's a year.
You don't need that crap. He said, just fill this out. So, boom, he said, and I saved some money too because the post office charged you $35 to process this. He said, you don't need that. Just give me a check for 130 bucks. So, they cashed my check. So, hopefully, my passport's going to show up so I can travel. But anyway, this is like lost in time. And Los Olivos, interesting enough, the first place I went to was the Fess Parker Inn. Fess Parker was a TV star, Davy Crockett. And after TV, he opened this winery and this restaurant and made a lot more money in the wine in the wine business than on TV. But anyway, that's his claim to fame. The Fess
So
Parker Inn.
you're waiting for the passport now. Now the DMV. Did you get your DMV? You get your real ID? I got
No.
mine, man. I have a star on mine.
No, I went there and the guy says, yeah, you've got a birth certificate, but it's a photocopy. We have to have the original. So I had to go back to the state of Pennsylvania and request with a stamp on it, a race stamp. So that's coming on May the 7th. I mean, I think this is all this voter ID, it's all to suppress the vote because it's so hard to get a real ID or a passport these days. Getting a voter ID is going to be
But
just as difficult.
the thing that caught my eye is that I know your intent in doing all this is to be able to return to the city by the bay,
Yeah,
right?
I'm gonna fly there.
You got to fly up to San Francisco.
Yeah.
So this makes me think, I know it's kind of an out there kind of concept, but Pete, we have some more stickers.
Yeah.
They came from Roy, WN3F.
Yeah, I got some.
Yeah. All right, enough said. I'm not going to say anything else. If the streets of the city of San Francisco are once again defiled,
It
well,
was not you.
the authorities will just, it's not me, but the authorities will have to look for the guilty party.
Well, actually, the trip may be to Cheyenne, Wyoming. I've always wanted to visit Cheyenne. And my number three son says he'd like to also. So maybe this summer we're going to fly up there to Cheyenne. So maybe on the back of a cow or something.
Do something like that.
There you go.
All right. Pete, tell us about your bench. What's on the bench?
Well, a couple things. First up, behind me is a mouse knob. And this is a new product from mostly DIYRF.com. As a matter of fact, there are
Oh, wait,
news.
babe. Pete, that is one big mouse, man.
Well, yeah. Well,
That's as big as your head.
yeah,
That's
see
like a big
the
rat. That's a rat knob.
yeah. So first of I was complaining to Todd that my eye-hand coordination is not so good, and also with fat fingers, makes it real hard to move on the software-defined radio screens with the mouse, just to move frequencies, increment frequencies. And he took a little said, "I'm gonna do something to fix you up," and he came up with this mouse wheel. There's on my blog, there's a link to a video, and this morning Todd just released his latest newsletter. And you can see information about that. So this is going to be a product offering. But when I published a video on this, Tony Fishbowl sends me an email and says, "By the way, been there, done that." So if you look at Sprat 164 in 2015, Tony actually did this by just bridging the contacts on a standard mouse with an encoder. So he was able to operate because it's the same kind of issue. Is it's real hard to move along on the frequencies with the mouse alone. You scroll wheel and everything else, and some of the mouses are not that really good unless you got a really high-end one, so you're jumping frequencies and everything else. So Tony did do that. However, Todd's version is going to have three user-defined buttons on it, so there's other functionalities besides just tuning the frequency. And there's two videos that are combined into one that shows it with the application with the Linux and also with Windows. So it's also been used with high-end software like the Thetis and ASDR console. And it's really neat because I got to tell you that I can do things with that mouse knob that I couldn't do with a standard mouse. So it's really going to be an interesting product, and especially with the user-defined buttons. Like one of the buttons can be, you can toggle between upper sideband and lower sideband, or hit the spot function. Or a push to talk is done with a space bar on the keyboard. So it's really going to be a nice adjunct to people who use software-defined radios and software that formerly has been operated with the mouse. Now, some of the higher-end units do have the keys on the keyboard. You can up-tune and down-tune, but you got to hold the key down. So this with the knob, it just gives you the feel of an old radio, with tuning the knob, so you can tune it in small increments and tune it back and tune it forward. So I've been really having a lot of fun. I'm essentially an alpha tester. I don't know what's inside that thing, and I didn't open up the box, so that's for Todd to explain. But it's going to be kind of an exciting product, and I'm really really anxious to see this actually come out. But it's in the newsletter that just got released this
I
morning.
saw the newsletter when I woke up this morning, and it looks really interesting. And I'm glad. We'll put the link up on the show notes on
Right.
the blog page. But that sounds really cool. But Pete, you've
So,
also been working on the MHST, the
yes.
Raspberry Pi,
Yes.
turning it into a transceiver, talking to Vienna Wireless Society. Tell us about
Yes.
that.
Okay, the MHST is Minimalist Homebrew SDR Transceiver. It's an acronym. And the Vienna Wireless Society has a project that is essentially an SDR receiver. And he works with the Coast software, and he can be implemented either in Linux or in Windows. So it's really kind of nice. And working with Dean, I got access to the software, and I built the board. And so I said, "Well, that's great, receive, but I want a transceive." So I've been playing over the last month or so trying to get it to transmit, and I did get it, have it on the air contact with it. However, there's some strange anomaly with this board. So you have the frequency that you're operating on. And let's say it's on 40 meters and it's lower sideband. Works perfect. You move up about 30 kilohertz and you got another signal that's an image, upper sideband. And that upper sideband image is stronger than the one that you really desire. Now there's functionality in the Qwest software that lets you abate that image. You can do it both on receive and transmit. So I've gone through all that process, but I can't get rid of it. Now here's the mystery. I have an identical board that doesn't use the VWS package, but uses the Softrock package in QISC. It does not have that image. Same board, same components, same board in the VWS, and I get the one with the VWS. I've tried all sorts of things to get rid of it, and it's a mystery. But it's definitely there, and it's probably not something you want to do, put on the air, especially if you operate near the image, end of the band. You're going to have a signal out of the band.
This is a great opportunity to ask the SDR wizards out there, and Dean is among them, to step in and help Pete get rid of that pesky signal.
What I can tell Pete is that the receiver doesn't do that, at least my version of it. So I don't
My receiver doesn't either.
know. So I don't know. I don't have a transmitter, so I couldn't say. All we did for the transmit for you, Pete, is enable the pin. I mean, we didn't do anything else other than that, right? So I don't know.
I don't know either. It's just there's something in there, and you know, there's certain things that I looked at. I'm saying, you know, one of the things I could do is take the Raspberry Pi Pico frequency controller and move it over to the transceiver that doesn't have the problem, and then eliminate that or eliminate the software. If it's present with that, then she'd say it's got to be something either in the realizing the software was not designed for transmit, it was designed for receive. So some of the things that may happen on the transmit side may be a little bit different. So
Yeah,
anyway, I
as you know, I'm not an expert at this QISC configuration. There's a million things you can do with it, so.
So I did see some images on receive, but using the QISC software, there's a config tab. You can reduce that image. I got rid of the image, so I said, okay, that works. But on transmit, it's present. So anyway, it's a little bit of a mystery, and just lots of fun. But again, cheap technology, $7 for that Raspberry Pi Pico, and it's dramatic. It's dramatic you can do with it. So it's kind of exciting. So that's what I've been involved with. Now still Bill involved with the administrivia. I just can't believe all the stuff that I still got to do. And matter of fact, one of the things that really came to mind, I'm thinking about getting a new car because my car has got 200,000 miles on it. It's leaking oil and it's 20 years old. So the first thing I look at, I said, uh-oh, I got a problem with the title and the registration. So even though I didn't get the real ID, I now got the registration changed. So you can't do anything. I mean, something as simple as the title and registration to your car, you have two names on it. You can't sell it with that two names. So you had to go fix that. So, I mean, just everything you deal with something has to change.
Oh man, that's terrible. Hang in there, Pete. I mean, it
You
sounds
bet.
like you're close to the end. I hope ham radio provides a little respite
Oh,
for you out there.
it drives you nuts.
Dive into the world of Raspberry Pi. It'll be great.
What fun. What fun.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pete. It's good to hear that you're back at the bench and you're struggling with this stuff because struggle is what we do here, right?
Someday it's gonna be fixed, and it's some simple little thing that says, God, if I would have known this a month ago, I would have saved a lot of grief.
We ask the wizards out there to send Pete the solution. Send it to us. Hey, this brings now moving to the opposite end of the technology spectrum. Now we're going to talk about the 40-meter direct conversion receiver project that we launched a while back, the Solder Smoke Direct Conversion Receiver Challenge, which stemmed sort of from the Ham Radio Workbench Receiver Challenge, but it kind of morphed and expanded. And a couple observations before we start really talking about this. We have 56 receivers have been built successfully around the world. Dean is quite correct in insisting on what we call a proof of life video. In other words, some guys say, yeah, it works fine. And then you say, well, great, send us a video. And the video never comes. Anyway, we like the proof of life video. So we've got 56 confirmed successful builds. And that's, it seems like small. I mean, it's not kind of Ariana Grande numbers where, she does one video and gets 3 million hits or something like that. We've got 56, not 56,000, 56 builds. And at first glance, that seems like a ridiculously small number until you start working on like web pages for all 56, and you start realizing that's a lot of receivers to have been built. And they're all out there. The other good thing about it, about having 56 receivers built, is that it makes it difficult for the guys who are like 57, 58, 59 to claim that the design doesn't work. They can't go to the dean and to me and say, "Ah, your design stinks. It doesn't work." Like they do with Pete, because we're able to just say, well,
It doesn't stop them from doing that, but they
it
really
does stop
shouldn't
them,
do it.
but it discourages them. And it gives us a good answer, because then we can very politely say, well, there are 56 other people in the world who have managed to get this thing working, and they're doing just fine with it. And you could take a look at the websites because they sound really good.
So Bill, if you can enable sharing, I just want to show one of these things for the
Okay, hold
people that
on.
are watching this on
I'm going to enable sharing here. Hold on. Oh, let's see. Hold on. Wait a
because
second.
this rig is a thing of beauty.
There you go. Multiple participants can
All
share.
right, here we go. Check this out.
Check this out. Those of you who are on video can check it
Okay,
out. Those of you
video,
who are
it's
on audio can just imagine. Look at that. Yes, that is a
solder
beautiful thing
smoke,
done
40
by
meter.
Wayne.
It's got a laser burned label on a cigar box. Solder smoke, 40 meter direct conversion receiver built by Wayne,
K01 GBM.
1GBM, K01GBM, 2025, special edition, matured in bourbon barrels, aged 12 years. Excellent, excellent. And the inside, just a thing of beauty. This is clearly the prettiest solder smoke direct conversion receiver that has been built. There's been some more interesting ones. There was one built on the bottom of a frying pan, but this one.
This one really is beautiful. And not only that, Wayne was asked about how he got the inscription where it says diode ring double balanced mixer.
Yep.
And he said that in the Maker Labs up there in Nashua, New Hampshire, they have a laser. And the
Yeah.
laser enabled him to write on the PC boards. Pete, this is like opening up a whole new world for PC board construction. I mean, you could label your parts and do it like better than we've been doing it with, which is with a Stabo marker. This is a lot better. This is a cut above what we've been doing.
And Pete, you can replace your CNC milling head with a laser head and just do it right on your CNC. So
Oh yeah.
there you go.
Cool.
Anyway, so this was the most beautiful of the receivers built to date, and I think it's just absolutely fantastic. It's inspired me to go look at my. I got a box of cigar boxes. It's inspired me because I have not boxed up any one of mine yet, so I may
It's
do
a
that.
great idea, and we thank Wayne for sharing that with us. Thank you for bringing that up, Dean. You know, a couple points that we'd like to make about this project. First of all, it's not too late to get in on the game because all of the great videos that Dean made about how to build the four stages are all still up on the Discord server. So we hope that you're going to do that. We think that there are about 10 receivers that are close to completion. It's close, but no cigar yet, because a lot of these receivers need to be finalized and made to work. And we've emphasized all the way through that this is the one thing that separates kit building from home brewing. When you're a home brewer, it's on you. I mean, you've got to be the one to make the device work. You built it, and there's nobody else to blame to send it back to the kit factory or anything like that. No. You got to make it work. So we encourage those folks to finish them. And there are about 10 of them out there that are in that category. One thing we want to also do is encourage guys who have successfully built this receiver to get others to do it, to share with others and say, hey, look, if I could do it, you could do it too. You too can build a receiver. This would put a sort of, Dina and I joked about this a little bit, we'd become like the Johnny Appleseeds of homebrew direct conversion receivers, but it would be good, and it's an opportunity to Elmer. It's an opportunity to help others. And God knows there are a lot of hams out there who would like to do this, but just haven't been doing it. So there's a chance to do that. Help others.
But I would say Johnny Appleseed is a much better analogy than Pied Piper,
The Pied Piper off
or Lemmings.
the edge of the cliff.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, Johnny Appleseed's probably a good way to do it. Other people have done it already. W4KAC, he built a second one for a friend. WZ5M built one, helped a friend do a second, and a third one may be on its way. And then, of course, we mentioned earlier, Make It Labs up in Nashua, New Hampshire, which is responsible for four receivers. I have a link to all of the 56 successful builds up on the show notes. You'll take a look there. The other thing we would try to encourage people to do is to do what Wayne did. Once you get the receiver working, then it's mod time. Then you can put it in boxes. You can work on the tuning arrangements. You could change the PTO to an SI5351. You could build a double sideband transmitter or even a single sideband transmitter. And just it opens the door to a whole lot of home brewing. And we've been kind of insistent that people build the receiver first. But once they get the receiver built, then there are no restrictions on home brewing. You could build whatever you feel like it. It's
So
just that we've kind of encouraged people to build the receiver.
Bill, that brings up one thing that I wanted to mention, which is we set up the Discord channel, Solder Smoke Discord channel, but we intentionally called it the Solder Smoke Discord channel, not the Direct Conversion Receiver Discord channel. We have a section that's entirely the Direct Conversion Receiver. It's got all the boards, but we have opened it up, and there are sections on building SSB radios. There are sections on building thermotrons and tubes. We have people building tube type devices. There's a section on SDR. We have people building SDRs on there, just SSB troubleshooting, scopes. So the Discord channel is open to anybody who wants to join. There's an open invite, Bill, posted on every single post related to this. It'll probably be in the show notes. So we encourage everybody who listens, who wants to engage in a safe space to just engage in technical conversations about homebrew ham radio. Welcome to the Solder Smoke Discord channel. You may not get an instant answer from one of us, but there's a lot of people on there now that are participating and helping and sharing with each other.
Yeah, I think it's really good. The other good point to make, though, is that the Discord channel is sort of the authoritative place to turn to. We've had more recent builders say, I went back and looked at some other website and saw the schematic, and it looks goofy to me. Well, we learned a lot in the process of doing this receiver, and we made a number of changes as we went through. But what we've been updating are the schematics on the Discord server. So really, if you're looking at older schematics, I would just say don't do that. Go take a look. It might take a few minutes to figure out how to use Discord. It's not that hard. And it's worth it because it'll take you to the most up-to-date information. Not only that, you could use the search figure.
I hid the schematics in a channel called Schematics.
Crafty of you.
And then there's another channel that's also well hidden if you're just getting started called Getting Started.
Or you could take a look at the videos that Dean made. They were
Yes.
probably in the getting started
They
area.
are.
There you go. So anyway, we hope people will do that. And it's been a lot of fun. It's been really kind of encouraging. I mean, the response that we get from hams around the world, a lot of guys have written in and said, "Hey, I've been a ham for 45 or 50 years, and I never homebrewed anything, and I always felt bad about it. But now I've built a receiver." And we chose this as the project because this is one thing that many people even back in the day, back when hams were hams and knew which end of the soldering iron to grab, A lot of them said, well, you can't build a receiver. Maybe you could build a transmitter, but you can't build a receiver. That kind of thinking is just incorrect because we have shown that it is possible to do this. And
Yeah,
like
and
we said,
I didn't do a lot of additional videos, but I did a couple. People were struggling with basic soldering, so I did a simple Manhattan soldering video, and then people went out and bought scopes
yeah.
at partly because we said, the best way to see your signals and all this is with an oscilloscope. When they say, "What's the next thing we should buy?" we almost always say, "After your multimeter, you need a scope to do the kind of stuff that we're doing." So people are buying them, but then they find out, oh, they got knobs and buttons and settings, and they don't really know how to use them. So I did just a 5-minute video on setting up your Rigol to test with our direct conversion receiver. I think I've received as many emails thanking me for that video as I have for the direct conversion receiver. And so it's not Alan Waelke level tutorial. It's turn this button, turn that, look at this, and you'll see the trace that you want to see for what we're doing. But
And
it's a way
then
to
take
get
a
you
picture with
started.
your cell phone and send it to us.
Yes, there you go.
But they're great videos, and thanks for doing that, Dean. All
Hey,
right,
Bill.
that
Hey, Bill.
yeah.
One of the things that's interesting about this project, and I've seen this in the past, a year or two go by, and all of a sudden, someone discovers the direct conversion receiver, and they tell 20 other people, and all of a sudden, you get this tranche of emails saying, "Hey, how do I do this? How do I go through that?" And you direct them, and they says, "Oh, that's how you do it." But I mean, it's just I've seen this over and over again, and you're going to experience things. So that number 56 is easily going to get over 100, given a couple of years, and by the time it permeates through the system.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Pete. And this is something that you and I have talked about a lot, that this is the benefit of doing this kind of Elmering on the internet, in that it continues. And I remember that the first time I contacted you, Pete, was after reading of one of your articles in Sprat or another publication, and I sent you an email and I said, wow, this guy named Pete Giuliano out there in California really knows his stuff, and he's writing back to me. Dean has had the same experience. One time we were trying to figure out how to use the G3 UUR method to characterize crystals in a filter, and the next thing you know, we were getting emails from G3 UUR. He said,
He said, "Wow, I didn't know anybody was still reading that stuff."
"They are." Yeah, so I think you're right, Pete. I think there is a It there it, there can be lulls. A lull usually occurs in the summertime when people have other outside activities to engage in, but then it'll pick up again, and all that stuff will be there, and the Discord channel will be there. So good, great stuff. Anyway, it's been a lot of fun, and the fun will continue. Even if Dean and I are not around, there are the 56 builders are all around, and they're in a good position to provide some advice on how to proceed. All right, Pete. This is the time. What do you always remind me of?
Shameless Commerce Division.
Shameless Commerce Division. Yes, it's we're obligated economically to do this. So yeah, every single podcast. One thing I'd say is think about becoming a Patreon sponsor. We've been doing a lot of short videos, a lot of stuff that doesn't really fit into the kind of the mainstream of the Solder Smoke podcast blog a sphere. And we've been putting it up on the Patreon channel, some natural photographs from the Dominican Republic, some stuff on drones. I'll talk about drones in a minute. Some videos on drones are up there. Anyway, it's a great, nice, and easy way to support the podcast and the blog and everything we do here at Solder Smoke. So it does cost money. So send us, become a Patreon sponsor and help out. The other, and it was already mentioned because Pete has that big mouse thing looking behind him, right? Two of them. Mostly DIY RF up in the Silicon Forest of the great Northwest near Portland, Oregon. Todd Carney, K7TFC, is up there. Please check out his site. Great stuff, great kits, great components, great subcomponents. Dean and I recently put some of his boards to use in homebrew 20-meter transceivers. Great stuff. Check it out. And it's a great resource for everybody who's interested. And I think it's a great title, too. Mostly DIY RF. Mostly. Not completely. Mostly. Mostly DIY RF. There's some flexibility there that's needed in this which is a hobby pursuit. The other thing I would say is, yeah, go
And
ahead.
by the way, be sure to check his newsletter out. He's got the W3NQN filters as kits, and that's now being offered. That's on the latest newsletter. So if you're one of some of those low pass filters, you can get them from him.
And get and sign up for the newsletter too. The newsletter is it's a good resource, and I would say go for that. Then finally, the other thing I would say is subscribe to our videos on the YouTube channel. You'll subscribe it. You'll always see these people saying subscribe to my channel and ring the bell so you'll get it. Okay, do all that stuff with the Solder Smoke YouTube channel, because we have now 56 videos up there about the about the direct conversion receiver. But yeah, check it out and try to subscribe, and it'll help. Every time we post a new one, you'll get a notification. That concludes this month's episode of Shameless Commerce Division. Dean, you've got some interesting stuff on your bench.
Oh,
Dean does.
nice.
I have. So first off, Pete mentioned the Vienna Wireless Society club build of a software-defined receiver. We have finished the design of the board and actually ordered the boards. They've been manufactured. Oliver K3IP has done the yeoman work of the design and doing the ordering and putting the yes kits together. For our club, we've got about 30 people who are going to build the boards. I built the prototype and it worked fine. I sent Pete the software that he was able to use. And this is the first project that we have done as a group in our makers group that is going to be, first of all, a software-defined radio. But we most importantly, we did it for the purpose of going from drawing a schematic in KiCad through manufactured PCB to doing surface mount soldering. And we're going to initially do surface mount soldering by hand with a soldering iron, but we've also got these screens made that basically overlay the board, and then you put solder paste down, then you put the components on, then you put it on a hot plate, and then it all melts into place. The solder melts into place, and that looks like it's a fantastic way to do surface mount work. But we're going to start with by hand so that everybody gets the basic skills down. And so those builds for our club are coming up in a couple of weeks. And you can go to the Vienna Wireless Society webpage and get to the makers group from there and see what we're doing. So that's the VWS project. And then in addition to that, we are going to be launching balloons this summer with Whisper beacons on them. That project is kind of waiting for a leader in our club to kind of finish it up. I have all the parts here, but I've been otherwise occupied, as you might have heard, with direct conversion receivers and this other project. And then I finally got so fed up with doing everything for other people over the last several months that I wanted to go back and build something myself. And so that brings us to the kind of the latest thing, which is inspired by Bill's Mythbusters and the fact that Pete sent me a link to a Yaesu VFO. I have now built a 20-meter transceiver, and if you're on YouTube, the beautiful Yaesu FT 401, not 101, VFO with the front plate, and dip it
It
up.
is
You
a
can see the
thing of beauty.
inside.
It is beautiful.
Got copper tape on the bottom for the ground plane. Little red boards up on the top if you're looking. Those are from Todd, mostly DIYRF TIA boards for the IF amplifiers. And then plywood boxed fit and finish. I think I might even put like a plexiglass lid on it with a hinge so I can always look down at the beauty that is inside. But let me tell you a little bit about the technical details. Last podcast I had finished the receiver and had it working on the bench, and it was working just fine, and I had to move to the transmitter side. I already had the final amplifier built, the hardest part of the transmitter. I already had it built because I had a spare board that when I was building the SBIDX last year, I had built a board. It's two and 3866 transistors as the driver stages, followed by an RD06 HF transistor. And it works great, puts out about 10 watts. So that was kind of the hardest part. All I had to do was screw it down to the board and wire it in. That was very easy. I built an NQN low pass filter for 20 meters. That took all of about 15 minutes. Pete, you are absolutely right. When you know stuff, you can do stuff. When I first built your simple SSB back in 2020, it took me about 5 months to build the radio. I think I have about 5 days total in this rig. So,
Just
you learn
like the
stuff.
stickers, just like the sticker says, folks.
You get better at it. The one of the things with these when you go from a receiver to a transceiver, you can have the transmitter working, you can have the receiver working, but you want to have the receiver and the transmitter working together.
Good point.
And that means that you got to switch a bunch of stuff when you hit that push to talk button. And every time I do this, and I know Bill has the same issue, you get your head wrapped around, all right, what goes where? You go to. So power is easy, right? You say, all right, on transmit, I want the microphone amplifier on and I want the power amplifier chain on. And on receive, I want the audio amplifier on and I want those other things turned off. That part's easy. But then you start thinking about signal flow. Okay, all right, I gotta go left to right on transmit, I gotta go right to left on receive, and then where do you put the low pa band pass filter and which gets so anyway, I have a four relay solution, one relay, double pull, double throw. It switches transmit and receive DC on one side of the relay. The other side of the relay, I just switched that to ground. That's the amp keyer. So that's the power relay. The other three relays, one of them is the antenna switch. It switches to the band pass on receive or the low pass filter on transmit. Easy. Then there's the mixer switch that switches the output of the mixer between the band pass filter and the IF amplifier. So on receive, you're just getting a signal out of the IF amplifier and going into the mixer, on transmit rather, and on receive, you're going into the mixer and out from the band pass filter. And then lastly was the one that I had to twist my head around is the band pass filter switch. And this became a issue after I first built the transmitter because I was testing transmit and I knew that the power amplifier produced a clean output, but when I keyed up, I got hash on the oscilloscope. And I was trying to figure out, well, where the heck is that coming from? So I put it in FFT mode so I could see what the signal components were. Now, the VFO is at 9 megahertz, and the IF is at 5 megahertz. And if you add 9 and 5, you get 14, and that gives you 20 meters. But if you subtract 5 from 9, you get 4 megahertz, which is not in the band that you want, and that is the mixing signal is there at the output. I had not put the band pass filter in the transmit chain,
Oops.
so I had to then redo my wiring, and now I'm switching both ends of the band pass filter. Because one of them gets switched to the antenna, the other gets switched. So anyway, I got that sorted out, and I put the band pass filter in. I rewired it, and the 4 megahertz spurious signal disappeared, and I have a beautiful clean output. So that
One
was
thing I just interrupt at this point, Dean. I'm sorry, but I mean, I've been there and done this too, and I every time recently I've done it, I've reminded of the very wise words of Pete Giuliano that you really need to do some noodling.
yes.
I usually have to sit down with a piece of paper and I draw like four little boxes that are the relays. Then I draw the power lines, how I'm going to power the relays. Then I draw the line for the PTT, what's going to happen when I go to hit transmit. Then all of the filters and the band, it becomes more complicated than you'd expect, but it does help if you noodle it.
Yeah, and this I the, and the bandpass filter is particularly complex in this situation because you're switching both ends of it, and it does different things on transmit and receive, and it's in a different place in the circuit on
Yeah.
transmit and receive. So anyway, that was the tough part. And yes, I was doing some noodling as well, drawing boxes and relays and trying to figure out what was going on. And then the last thing that I wanted to do was on the Yaesu VFO, there are two windows because I got this beautiful escutcheon, this beautiful front plate that's got a cutout for the analog dial, but it had this other cutout which I think was probably used for a power meter or an SWR meter on the original radio, but I didn't have that part of it, and so I wanted to put a digital frequency display on there because that makes it easy to see what frequency you're on. And this was a multi-band radio, and I think you had to have a secret decoder ring to look at the knobs and figure out what your frequency was, because the numbers make absolutely no sense they don't look like frequency numbers. There's two different dials with different scales on them, and I suppose you could figure it out after a while, but I don't know. All I know is I couldn't figure it out, and so I built a little digital display with an Arduino Nano. And I don't know if we'll be able to see it on the video here. Yeah, it's difficult to see. There's a board that's just got an Arduino Nano on it, and it's got a little prescaler chip on it, which is a divide by 64. So it takes the frequency that you're tuned to, divides it by 64, and feeds that as a square wave to the Arduino, which the Arduino can count. And the reason you need the prescaler is that even though the Nano has a 16 megahertz clock, it can only handle about a million interrupts per second. So, at a million interrupts per second, and if you know a little bit about digital signal processing, you know that the Nyquist frequency says that you have to have about double the number of
Yeah,
samples to
three
avoid
times.
aliasing. So, the most you're going to get out of our Arduino Nano is 500 kilohertz, which is not going to give me a whole lot of tuning frequency if I can only count to 500 kilohertz. But if I divide by 64, then suddenly I can get up to 30 megahertz with no problem. What that divide by 64 though does is it means that the frequency counter itself is only accurate to 64 hertz, right? So that means I don't need the lower two digits on my display because they're just noise and they're meaningless anyway. So I just put a 0.1 for 100 hertz, and then there's a little more math you got to do because you set the window at which you're counting the number of interrupts to either if you do it for a full second, then you're going to get a one-to-one response, right? You count for a second and you look at the number of pulses, and that's going to give you your frequency. But if you do that, you only get one sample per second, and if you're tuning a VFO and it's only updating once a second, it's going to be really sluggish and not very satisfying. Well, if you say, well, let's do it as a quarter of a second. Well, now that 64 hertz error bar becomes 64 times 4. So now you got a 256 hertz error bar. I didn't want that big an error bar in the tuning. So I settled on a half a second update, which means I got 128 hertz one way or the other. And when I first hooked it up, the VFO is very stable, so that's really good. But when I was looking at the frequency display, it would alternate between two signals that were 128 hertz exactly apart. And that just meant that I was missing one pulse or getting one pulse on one sample. So I just wrote some code to say, look, if the frequency doesn't change by more than 128 hertz, don't update the display. And so now it's rock solid, and it is beautiful, and it's another piece of homebrew radio that combines my native digital skills, because I grew up doing digital and computer programming, with my newly earned analog skills, and that was a lot of fun. So
I think it's
that's the
just
up.
fantastic. It's a thing of beauty. Dean brought it into the radio club luncheon last week, and people were just drooling over it. It's really quite an amazing piece of gear.
Well, because as you say, Bill, 99% of our fellow hams don't do anything like this.
I know. They could get on that road. They could get on the road to do that. You started with the Michigan Mighty Mite,
I did.
and we have the Joy of Oscillation in the DC receiver. So yeah, it's the same kind of thing. But congratulations on that. on that, Dean. All right, let me just talk a little bit about, oh, Pete, you got any comments on Dean's
I
work?
was just going to ask how he cut the round hole for the speaker.
Oh, just a hole saw in my drill press.
I have one without the drill press. I just do the same thing. And I was going to comment on that too, because I managed to find for two of the three radios that are like this, I found like little screen guards. On the third one, I didn't find anything. I just said, well, I'll just have to remember not to stick a pencil in there or something. I know Dean's going to have to remember too. Dean, don't stick a pencil in there.
You can't see it. It's invisible.
Oh, I see it there. Yeah.
I put window
Mesh.
screen in there. Yeah,
All
window
right,
screen
very good. All
mesh.
right. So you don't
Yeah.
have to remember. All right,
No,
good.
I won't poke a pencil through it. I got a guard in there. So yeah.
All
And
right.
actually, the round holes are easy because I had a hole saw. Square holes in the middle of the board are more difficult.
They
So
are. They're hard. They're tough.
CNC mill. The CNC
Yeah,
mill.
you can do a CNC.
The
My board's
250,000 dollar CNC mill.
My board is too big to fit on the mill. I guess I could turn it sideways and figure it out. But yeah.
I got one of those little crimpers thing that you just
A nibbler, a
nibbler.
nibbler.
The
Yeah.
nibbler worked for me. I used the nibbler on the chassis for my Dominican Republic 100 watt 0.1 kW transmit linear. All right. So here at the Solder Smoke Northeast Northern Virginia Falls Church Shack, I've been involved in some suburban renewal because we had carpeting in here that was really getting kind of funky. And my wife kind of said, you got to get rid of that carpeting. And then I said, okay, well, let me take everything out of here and we'll get rid of the carpeting. And then she said, when you got everything out of there, they might as well paint the walls of the shack. And I said, no, can't do that. It's too much. I've got too much stuff. And she said, wisely, think about it. And you guys know what that means. That means like you're going to do it. It's just going to wait a while for you to realize that you're going to do it. So that's
Give
what
up.
happened. And she was, of course, right. So this was an opportunity for me to clear out the shack. Everything went out to the garage, which is right out there, and was placed on pallets in the garage. And so then after they did, they put a new floor. I got rid of the old carpet, which was indeed quite funky. They put down some new flooring that looks quite nice. They painted the walls. That looks quite nice. And then I said, I'm going to be very selective in what I allow back into the shack, because I haven't gotten rid of all this stuff. I'm going to be careful about what I bring back in. And so I knew it was time to kind of thin the herd a little bit. You'll notice on the bookshelf behind me here, I'll move my head. See the bookshelf there? I got rid of a lot of books. I had that bookshelf just packed with books. And I got rid of about, I think about half of them. Half of them I just never really looked at. I had them, I thought they might be interesting, but I got rid of about half of them. On the rigs, there were a lot of rigs around here that I think I'm going to get rid of. I have a DX40. I have a DX60. I have a VF1 VFO. I have another kind of VFO. I have the HW101 that we talked about earlier. All these rigs, these old tube type rigs. I hate to say it, but I'm just not going to work on them anymore. And they're taking up space here, and it's time to get rid of them. Now, I mentioned this at the radio club luncheon last week. I talked to the guy who was in charge of kind of the silent key acquisitions of the club that feed into the annual web fest. And I said, hey, I got a DX40 and a DX60. And he kind of very politely said, oh, thanks, but no thanks. So I don't know where this stuff is going to go. But there's not a big demand for it anymore. But there is some gear that I decided I just could not get rid of. And you can't really see it because it's off here over the side. The angle of the camera's changed a little bit. But I could not get rid of the HT37 and the Drake 2B because I acquired these rigs with newspaper route money back in 1973, 1974. So they've been with me all this time. The actual gear, not gear that I bought years later on eBay. So they're there. The DX100 and the HQ100 is there. The DX100, because, well, if I'm getting rid of a DX40 and a DX60 and a VF1, Combine the three, that's a DX100, right? Right? Am I right? The VF1 is in the DX100. The DX40, DX60, 60 and 40, 100, boom, there you go. So I'm going to keep that. Plus, John Zaruba, K2ZA, gave it to me. It was his father's rig. And I promised to keep it on the air. So I use it once a week. I check into the old military radio net. And I did it this week and I had a very successful check-in. So it's kind of fun. But that will be the limit of the boat anchor rigs here. And let's see what else. Oh, I got a new operating table. I got rid of the shipping containers and the computer desk that I had been using here, right under here, that's holding up the operating position. And I bought for a couple $100 a 6 foot long, 6 foot by 2 foot table from Husky. Home Depot delivered it, $200. Man, it is solid. It is nice. I like it. It's adjustable height. It makes a big difference. So that was a big improvement here. And let's see what else. Oh, beacon operations. They continue from the Dominican Republic. My beacon is on 28233.5. It's on 28.233.5. And I get reports on it. Guys send me in reports. The guys from all over the world are sending in QSL card requests on the beacon. And not only that, if you go to the Reverse Beacon Network page, if you search for beacon N2CQR/B, they can't handle like HI7 stroke N2CQR/B. But if you just go N2CQR/B, it'll show me operating from the Dominican Republic and it'll be on there. So it's kind of interesting. There are some guys in Germany who pick it up quite regularly, and some guys in Florida. One guy in Costa Rica gets it quite nicely. So that's kind of fun too. One final thing I'll mention is that I got a new drone. I became an enthusiastic drone user in the Dominican Republic, and I thought it was kind of timely, but I decided it was time to buy a DJI drone. And I got one, and I'm not going to fly it until I go to the Dominican Republic because we're inside the no-fly zone here inside the national capital area. So I don't want to violate any laws. Although, Dean, I do note that you have the Dirty Harry Clint Eastwood sticker poster right behind you there, which leads to much suspicions that I have about your possible involvement in the San Francisco Capers. I'm not going to say anything else. I had to get a license. The guys at the radio club told me that I had to get a drone pilot's license. Do you believe this? So I
Bill,
went, I got it.
if you don't get your drone pilot's license, you have to ask yourself one question.
That's
Do
it.
you feel lucky?
Yes, Dirty Harry, I do. But I got the stupid license, and I'm ready. Although I can't use it, I can't fly here. And guess what? That license is not going to get you too far in the Dominican Republic. I mean, that's different. Hey,
Now
you got.
the DJI software does leave it up to you to decide whether you're going to be a violator of the FAA's guidelines. And it says
But
if you
I
fly
understand
this,
that
it is at
DJ,
your responsibility.
it's your responsibility, especially if you've taken the course and you know that it's all against the rules. So DJI will not pay your fines for you.
That is correct.
So anyway, I'll fly to the Dominican Republic. Hey, it's time for Solder Spoke Mailbag. Here we go. Dave, W2DAB, up on the Upper East Side of New York City, Manhattan Island. He has built and successfully provided proof of life of a Manhattan build of the solder smoke direct conversion challenge receiver. He's done Manhattan building on Manhattan Island. It's fantastic. And not only that, he sent us a proof of life video, and it just happens that the station that he's receiving is transmitting CW from East 106th Street, which is about 20, 25 blocks north of him. So it's just really, really good. So it's Manhattan build, Manhattan reception on Manhattan Island. Thanks for doing that, Dave. Thanks for sending the video. Rich, K2 GJ XWA0CGM. He sent me some nice ham radio memories of using his Drake 2B and an HT37. I got a picture of it up on the blog. Thanks for sending that, Rick. Rich. West W4JYK from the Vienna Wireless Society. Also completed a receiver and sent us a proof of life video that I have up on the blog. Thanks for doing that. We got a nice note from Farhan WV from VU2 ESE. Very nice. Todd, K7TFC. We've mentioned mostly DIYRF. Todd is a very thoughtful guy, and he sent us a very thoughtful email about the difference between simple gear and complex gear and the advantages of simplicity. So I always think that this is a case where we have to kind of keep in mind Einstein's admonition, keep it simple, but not too simple. So I think he's right about that. Thanks for sending that message, Todd. Paul WA1MAC, he built an 80-meter QRP transmitter using a glue stick. Fortunately, I've moved beyond the glue stick mania. All right. I know Pete is greatly relieved to see an end of glue stick madness. Maybe it's from sniffing the glue stick that I stopped and I'm no longer building glue stick rigs. But
So,
anyway,
Bill, the new thing is ICOM
ICOM chapsticks. All right. Look at that. Man, that's gonna be better than a Yaesu FT101 BFO. you see, the madness continues. Armand, our old friend from down in Richmond, WA1UQO, he had the regen receiver that he built. He built this really beautiful regen receiver, and it was picked up and highlighted by Dave, AA7EE. Dave is the guy who takes these rigs and he makes the most exquisite, beautiful pictures of all these rigs, and he puts it up on his site. And I saw this and I said, Dave, you need to build a solder smoke direct conversion receiver. And he said he's got a whole bunch of things on his plate and he's not going to get around to doing it. That's fine. But he asked a question. He says, what can we do to fight back against the FCC action against direct conversion receivers? And I said, Dave, you got to fight the power, my friend. You got to fight. You got to join the revolution. Fight back against the FCC. Build that direct conversion receiver and put it on. Don't worry about the 85th harmonic and Starlink receivers. Just do it. Roger, Papa Alpha One Zulu Zulu has sent me a great number of some great videos, including one about the history of the Heathkit company. And I think Roger and I both disagreed about this. We both kind of were in this on the same frequency with this, in that this was sort of this video was sort of like an ode to Heathkit. I mean, let's face it, Heathkit's great. I just talked about all the old Heathkit gears I have here, right? But there's a difference between Heathkit and home brew, all right? And I think this kind of video kind of blurred the distinction in a way that was not helpful. We've talked about this many times. Nobody ever finished a Heathkit DX40 and said, "Look, Ma, I home brewed a radio." No, you assembled the kit. Thanks. It's different. Let's see. Oh. Dean and I have been nominated for a prestigious ARRL award, nominated by our good friend Bruce KC1FSZ. Thanks to him. Thanks, Bruce. I don't know whether we're going to get it or not. It doesn't seem like this project is the kind of the ARRL's kind of thing, but we were nominated sort of like a technical, some sort of technical. What is it called, Dean?
ARRL Technical Services Award.
Technical Services Award, probably all those messages that we responded to and all the advice that we dispensed and all those videos that you did. Who knows? Maybe we'll win. I hope so. I hope we win. Thanks. But anyway, in any case, thanks for nominating us, Bruce. KC1FSZ did the nomination. Bob, my good friend, KD4EBM. Bob is a really interesting guy, and he helps out with the construction of a lot of the QRP Labs transceivers. And I sent him the message that we got from Hans saying that Hans had cracked the code on SSB from the QCX or I think the QMX transceivers. And this had been a real problem because a lot of the rigs that had sort of followed this kind of architecture just didn't sound good on SSB. Let's face it, they just didn't. And Hans sent around a kind of an explanation of how he has used what they call polar modulation to produce the SSB signal. Holy cow, it's complicated. It's really, really hard. My head hurts just thinking about it. I wish everybody who's trying to figure it out a lot of luck, and I wish Hans a lot of luck with the putting it together. But Bob is digging into it. Bob is trying to understand it and make sure that he understands how the polar modulation scheme, even the block diagram on this thing, it's got like 16, 17 blocks on there. They're doing phase modulation on one part of it, and then amplitude modulation on another part of it, then combining it, and out it goes. And whoo, complicated stuff. Peter, VK2 EMU. I thought of Peter when during the course of the suburban renewal here, I had to take down the N2CQR sign that has adorned the shack here for all these many years. Peter made this thing for me, and I put it back. I put it back up more permanently. I didn't use, duct tape or anything like that. I went up there and screwed it in. It's up there. It's now permanently a part of the solder smoke shack. Thanks for sending that to us, Peter. Good to hear from you again. I got an email from Victor, Hotel India 7 Sierra. He popped up when I was in the Dominican Republic because I couldn't hear him. Because he's only 46 kilometers away from me in the Dominican Republic. But I could hear a station in the US talking to him. I heard the call sign and I QRZ'd him. I looked him up. And sure enough, he's only about 46 kilometers away from my location in the Dominican Republic. And so I in Dominicus. So I sent him an email and he responded. And he sent a really nice email. So thanks very much for that, Victor. He congratulated me on many things in life. He said, "I won the lottery," and I said, "Yes, it's true, I did." So he's right. Jim KI4THC got his extra ticket. Congratulations, Jim. Jim's a member of Vienna Wireless. He's in the Makers Group. Kirk NT0Z sent Kirk. Kirk is somebody Pete and I talked to a long time ago, who used to work for QST and the ARRL. He's an old-time radio amateur. And he wrote a very thoughtful piece for Monitoring Times that focused it on the difference between kits and homebrew. And I took a clip from it and put it up on the blog. It was really good. Now that generated some additional commentary. And a guy wrote in and said, the Soviet Union, when they sent spies abroad, and I understand they did that quite a bit, they sent them off not with like radios, not like the Paraset radios that the Brits and the Americans used during the Second World War. They sent them off with just sort of a knowledge of radio. And wherever they arrived, they would go around to little stores and buy capacitors and inductors and rheostats and everything else. And then they would put the whole thing together, you see, set up an antenna, learn the Morse code, and communicate with Moscow Center. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking back about how difficult it was to get 40-meter direct conversion receivers working. It was really hard. I don't know if this is possible. It can be that people were just sort of exaggerating their radio prowess, but I have my doubts about that. But we throw it out to the group. We throw it out to the listenership and to you guys here right on the Solder Smoke Podcast. Is this possible, or was this sort of an exaggeration? I wonder. None of these radios have survived. We don't have any examples of completely homebrew gear that they built. And not only that, do they think they could really take like Agent Sonya? No, I'm not casting any aspersions on Agent Sonya, but she doesn't look like a radio person, right? And then just say, we're going to give her a couple lessons. She's going to go out there to Shanghai, buy some parts, put it all together, throw up an antenna, learn Morse code, and communicate with Moscow Center. Oh, I don't know. I don't know about that. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, that seems like a tough nut to crack. I mean, maybe a simple regen, but anything more than that would be kind of tough.
Even a
I
simple, even a simple regen.
saw Mr. Spock do it in Star Trek. It's got to be possible.
On that note, if Mr. Spock could do it, everybody could do it. Hey, listen, we've been going on here. It's almost we're over an hour. So guys, thanks very much. Thanks for joining in on the Solder Smoke Madness here for another month. The spring has sprung. Pete, good luck with all your travels and your documents. I hope you make it to Cheyenne, Wyoming. I hope you get the docs. Dean, great to see you again.
Make sure you bring your letters of transit, Pete. Very
Yes, yes,
important.
yes, yes. Hey, I think it's getting to be that way. No kidding. I mean, they really make it tough to get the real ID unless you got all of the dot life. For instance, the guy says, "Where's your passport?" I said, "It's being renewed." He says, "I can't do anything for you." He says, "Show up with the new passport or the old passport, but you got to have something." I said, "It's in work. I had a picture of it." He said, "That's no good."
Oh well, hang in there. The end
Yeah.
is you'll get them. You'll get the doc soon.
Coming soon. Hope.
7-3 guys. 7-3 is from Northern Virginia.
7-3 from the left coast.
And 7-3 from Great Falls.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.